Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
On September 9th, Ingrid Yang could be found cramped over a desk, left foot asleep, right hand swollen. She had Shao and Chow on the mind, so much so she felt his allusions and alliterations leaking from her every orifice and puddling beneath her. She was sucking on the ends of her hair, then sniffing the damp locks before picking at the eczema patches on her ankles. Her aching eyes were marbled pink from a sleepless night, punctuated by unnecessary trips to the bathroom. She simply idled on the toilet with her eyes closed, nothing going out of or into her body. Even on the rare occasions sleep visited, Ingrid was plagued by a constant pinching pain in her stomach. Sometimes she imagined, hopefully, that she was developing ulcers. No one could fault her for failing her dissertation because of her stomach ulcers, could they? Pneumonia then? What about mono? But how to contract these illnesses was another question entirely. The black market was the obvious choice, but then again, so was an undergrad frat party. Pulling her laptop close, she searched fastest way to contract mono, followed by top 10 deathly illnesses. No, Ingrid Yang was not doing well.
That's Elaine Shea Chow reading the opening of her debut novel, Disorientation. The book is about a 29-year-old PhD student named Ingrid Yang, who is having a lot of trouble finishing her dissertation. Like her protagonist, Elaine was in a similar situation, struggling with her own PhD dissertation. Unlike Ingrid, Elaine was in Paris when the 2015 terrorist attacks happened. This experience pushed Elaine to confront the question, if she were to die, what would she wish she had done with her life? She thought back to her childhood when she would write stories and poems. So she left her PhD program and Paris. Fast forward 7 years, and Elaine has published a very funny and socially relevant campus satire.
When I started writing the novel, I think setting in academia was a way for me to, I guess it was familiar territory, right? Because writing a novel is so daunting, and obviously I had never written one before and did not know how to go about it. So I think academia gave me a way to transition. And yeah, the things I wanted to talk about, I felt like academia was provided a good setting where I could explore those ideas.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your protagonist, Ingrid Yang. She's a Taiwanese-American woman who's trying to finish her dissertation. What is her dissertation about?
Yeah, it's about a poet named Shaowen Chow. He's America's most famous poet in this world, so he's, you know, fictional. He's sort of described as the Chinese Robert Frost, and his poetry, I think, is very appealing to white Americans because it just presents the East and China in the way they want to understand it, as exotified and very distant, where they don't feel implicated. So he writes poems about teacups and rivers and things like that. She has no real interest in him. You know, she was basically coerced into studying him. So because of that, and the fact that he's been truly, you know, over-researched, she doesn't know what to say and has been struggling for 4 years.
As you mentioned, writing this dissertation is a real challenge for Ingrid because she never really wanted to research Chow in the first place. So how did this happen? Was she just pressured by an advisor to write about Chow?
Yeah, exactly. So her advisor, Michael Bartholomew, she's introduced to him, I think, very purposefully because the university understood what kind of Asian American student she was, and Michael basically takes this opportunity to scare her in a lot of ways to researching him, because it's in his interest, as we find out later in the novel, for Shao and Chow to continue being America's greatest Chinese American poet. And in order to do this, you know, students have to keep researching him, keep him relevant. So he basically frightens her and says she'll never get a job doing anything else. If she wants tenure, researching someone canonical like Chow is the only way. And he tells this story about how adjuncting without health insurance is so horrifying, and how his student pulled out her own molar because she didn't have dental insurance. That's how she ends up researching this poet she truly has no interest in.
Yeah. Ingrid's fiancé, Stephen Green, is white, and Ingrid has this complicated relationship with white men. Can you tell us about that?
She has only ever dated white men, and that's something she has to unpack throughout the novel. It's such a hard subject for her that it takes a long time for her to even admit that, and she only really does it sort of subconsciously in this feverish dream she has. But she basically finds out that Stephen, her fiance of 5 years, has a secret folder where he stores photos of all his Asian ex-girlfriends. And this throws her into turmoil because she had not known about his inordinate, you know, obsession with Asian women. And it throws their entire relationship into question because now she has to ask herself, oh, do you actually love me for who I am on the inside? Or do you really see me as a set of interchangeable parts, these, you know, reducing me down to these traits that are found in millions of other women? And, you know, did you just sort of choose me by chance? So she really spirals down, having to live with this doubt and ask herself, can I stay in a relationship where doubt has now entered? It was important for me to explore this type of relationship that is very ubiquitous. And I think with a lot of my Asian friends, we've talked about the fear of being fetishized and how it truly messes you up in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that would be the case. Ingrid has these very nuanced relationships with her best friend, Eunice Kim, and her nemesis, Vivian Vo. How do these characters interact with each other?
Yeah, I love Eunice and Vivian. People have referred to them as sort of the trifecta of Asian women in the novel, which I love so much. I wrote 3 versions of the novel, and Vivian and Eunice only appeared in this last version, and I realize now how necessary they are because I think it is important to show, in a way, there's sort of different facets of who Ingrid could be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's say Ingrid, if she became radicalized now that she's starting to understand things more, she could become a Vivian. Or with Eunice, I think Eunice is more concerned with just enjoying her life. And she's not as sort of anxious and paranoid and existential as Ingrid. And so she's like, listen, I know we live in a bad system, but I'm going to have fun while I'm here. And I think if Ingrid were less anxious, more chill, she could be like Eunice and be quite happy. It was important for me to have these different Asian female characters, also with very different politics. It was just important to show we're obviously not a monolith. We come with all different backgrounds and beliefs, and often they jar against each other.
You said that you had to work through things before you could write Asian characters the way you do now. How so?
Right. So when I was in undergrad, and that was the first time I took creative writing as an elective. And so to me, it was just, oh, this is like a fun class. But in retrospect, I realized, oh, every single one of my characters, without fail, were all white. And a lot of it was I was trying to copy what I was being taught. So the writers we would read in class that were very revered were, you know, Raymond Carver, of course, Flannery O'Connor, James Joyce's short stories. It was just, they were people very unlike me. I guess I didn't even understand how to take what I was learning in class and apply it to my own life. It was just like, oh, well, I will now write a short story about rural poor white people. And that's what I was doing. And I think I realized, I was like, oh, this must be working because my teachers would really like it. I think purely because I just learned the beats of, oh, this is what is thought of as great American literature. I think at that age, I think I would have felt too afraid to write about people like me and stories that are similar to my own life, I think because I didn't want to draw attention to being Asian in a way, or I was so afraid of being stereotyped. And I really had like a chip on my shoulder to say, you know, don't limit me. I can write about whatever I want. Because I did feel even then that this expectation that if that sort of the only thing I could write was something like the Joy Luck Club, I think because that had been foisted on me, I just really had no interest in Asian American literature and thought it was all like that. It took me a long time to learn that and to unlearn these, you know, certain fears I had. So now it's a total 180, whereas before I was just writing rural white characters. Now I'm like in every story I write, I mean, the main characters are always Asian or Asian American. And I finally discovered that's what I meant to write. And I needed to carve out that path. And it definitely took a long time.
Yeah. You recently wrote an essay for the website The Cut that went viral. Mm-hmm. You tweeted that it was the hardest thing you've ever written and that it took mm-hmm. you 4 years to finish. Can you tell mm-hmm. us a bit about it?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning it. The very first iteration of it in 2015, when I basically fell into this online rabbit hole and I was discovering these truly terrifying forums and blogs where white men would just discuss Asian women. It was as if we didn't really exist. Like they were so open without fear of ever being, I think, found out that the honesty was brutal. Because it's anonymous, right? The internet, like none of them are using their real names. And then there was another link to this website that just collected news articles of murders, of specifically white men murdering Asian women. Most of the time they were not strangers, right? So they were either girlfriends, wives, or they were seeing them, seeing sex workers. So I became haunted by that, deeply haunted, was even like physically unwell from reading all the murders. And the first iteration of the essay is just these men speaking for themselves. So I would copy and paste their words exactly. I wouldn't change a thing. And then I would just put a summary of the murder, a murder. And then it was back and forth, you know, summary, quotation for 18 pages. And rightly so, you know, I did try to submit it, but rightly so, editors were like, we cannot publish this. You know, it's incredibly violent, that version. It's incredibly triggering to read. I didn't know what to do with it, but I knew there was a connection, right? And I knew I needed that it was so important because this was about life and death, right? This was about my survival. And I started writing again in March 2021 after the Atlanta shootings, where for the first time, you know, because in the first version, I wasn't putting my words into the piece really. But now I feel like I had some distance, and the shootings, it just confirmed this feeling like I was being gaslit. Because in 2018, I did have this feeling of, why does no one care? You know, I'm trying to tell you this phenomenon, this intersection of violence and fetishization exists, but why is no one listening? And then I think in 2021, I was like, oh, okay, I think some people are starting to see this. And so I started writing. But I think that material, it was so dark, I honestly, and emotional for me to read, that I didn't even read again what I wrote. Finally, I started working on the essay, really trying to build it into an essay when I had distance from it in like November last year. And then the essay actually kept evolving some more because there were more attacks against Asian women. That's how it took 4 years.
What is next for you?
Well, I have a short story collection that is also coming out from Penguin Press. I think it'll be great for readers to see me writing in different genres, because there's a lot of speculative stories, actually. There's like a fairy tale. There's a horror story, like a futuristic sci-fi story. So because I really do love writing in different genres, I'm excited to work on that again and also show I don't just write, you know, campus satires. I like to dabble in many things. But yeah, that's what's on the horizon.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Elaine Shea Chow, thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on Disorientation. It's a wonderful debut novel. Hard to believe it's a debut novel.
Oh, that's so kind, Doug. Thanks so much for talking with me and of course, for just reading and enjoying the novel.
Elaine Shea Chow is the author of Disorientation. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Sarah Pauly, George Pelicanos, and Elaine Shea Chow. If you want to hear it again or catch up on past episodes, click over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast catcher and click subscribe, follow, and like. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
What kind of rapping name is Steve? Steve.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Wonderful. You're very clever, Adam.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm Doug, and I can't be locked in a cage like some sort of manimal.